coming out today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, May the 14th, and this is the Ed Sub of Ways and Means, and we're here working with Heck, and we're going to open a... Can I open a public hearing without a quorum?
Yes.
Yeah, you can.
Open a public hearing on 5024. And invite Mr. Cannon up. And Doug, anything?
Mr. Chair, members, just to set the stage, today's presentation will be, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. It's across a number of the policy packages that you have not discussed before, and we'll also look at some of the things that were not included either in current service level or the governor's budget that has come forward since then, and much of that surrounds sort of the need to build Heck as a state agency, where instead of coming little pieces from every other place, there are some infrastructure needs that will need to be funded to keep them operating as a full-fledged state agency with millions of dollars, hundreds of millions flowing through it, actually over $1 billion flowing through it, mainly as payments elsewhere. But it does need the infrastructure to keep track of all that, as well as to run an agency of over 100 folks.
So it's not money that Ben can use to go buy a new car?
I don't know what Mr. Cannon drives.
It could be a Harley.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Get something out early on. Thank you. I'm going to be particularly interested as a longtime member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board regarding... and I have a partner in following the money on workforce, the CSL youth programs, the whole enchilada. Did a lot of work to get all these new local workforce boards, and just want to make sure that we're taking care of our folks.
Mr. Cannon.
Great, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the HEC. Thank you, Doug, for the opening. You covered a lot of what I intended to say in the sort of framing. We'll be focused on portions of the HEC's budget that we haven't spent much time with to this point. So I won't be addressing. I've organized the presentation really around our policy option packages, basically requests for funding over CSL, or in a couple of cases under CSL. I have not included, however, our packages are very significant and important packages related to expanding state support for the Public University Support Fund, the Community College Support Fund, the Oregon Opportunity Grant. We've taken those up in separate hearings, and so I won't be touching or directing much attention to those very important requests today, notwithstanding the attention that I expect those topics will get and should get in the context of today's revenue forecast and your ongoing work on the HEC budget. So instead, we're focused on a variety of packages that, as Doug suggested, several of which are really about how the agency is staffed and supported and organized in order to do the work that we're required to do with our colleges, universities, workforce, and scholarship programs. Also, some miscellaneous packages, including, and I don't mean that sort of disparagingly, because they're very important packages, including relating to some of the workforce issues that Representative Huffman described, including relating to the community leverage and innovation funds that you've heard a little about previously, but we'll be spending just a bit more time on today. So with that, just a reminder of the HEC vision adopted by our commission over a year ago, really focused on affordable and successful and coordinated education for Oregon, post-secondary education and training for Oregonians. I think it is important to step back for just a moment and consider why the HEC was created and what may be some strategic advantages to an organization like the Higher Education Coordinating Commission focused on student success in post-secondary broadly. And I will acknowledge this has been a bit of an experiment. Oregon has not had an entity broadly focused with significant responsibilities on higher education, post-secondary education, and training generally. And I would submit to you it is an experiment worth conducting, and it is showing some initial signs of promise and success. And let me just highlight a couple of the advantages, and they're sort of noted in the slide here. But to be even more specific, when your concern or the state of Oregon's concern is higher education affordability, I think that a organization like the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, looking broadly, may give you a different answer about how to focus investments than if you were to ask a community college specifically, or a community college agency, a public university or public university agency, or a scholarship program or a scholarship agency. And that's what we've had in the past, had separate agencies. Our commission is responsible for thinking broadly about the question of affordability and student success. Likewise, when it comes to capital investments that the state may make, and this seems like a really obvious place for the need for or for some advantages to having an organization like ours that thinks broadly and can help you to prioritize capital investments across our entire post-secondary system. Issues of developmental education. I think there are advantages to having, that came up yesterday, that having an organization that's really student-focused and looking not at institutional silos, but at student success. Time to degree, which you've paid so much, I think, appropriate attention to. A perspective that reflects the student and the state and the public interest in accelerating time to degree and brings that forward first and foremost, I think can provide some significant advantages to you and to the state in decision making. So our role, and you've seen this slide before, I'll just highlight sort of formally some of the HEC's responsibilities and authorities. We do funding allocations, you know that, to our public colleges and universities. We do program and degree approvals for our colleges, for our universities, for many of our private institutions. They're required to come to HEC to have the authority to operate degree programs in Oregon. We approve the missions of our public universities. So while we've created institutional boards that themselves adopt missions, those mission statements have to be approved by the commission to really ensure that they are aligned with a statewide approach to providing and organizing our public universities. We do student and consumer protection, particularly focused on for-profit colleges and trade schools. We do data reporting and research. And I'll stop here. We'll come back to it in a few minutes. But this is really, really important. We are the repository for student data from our colleges, universities. And that becomes then the basis for our funding allocations. It becomes the basis for our reporting to you, all the things that you've looked at. That is the result of the data that we keep, the system. It's an IT and a staffing issue. We do coordination, including convening and strategies and a certain amount of rulemaking around the coordination of our higher education system. And we operate a couple of programs, and most importantly, our state need-based
aid
program.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Taylor and I serve on a different committee, and we've been talking a lot about IT programs. Ben, could you describe just a little bit more about your IT program and how does it connect up with K-12 or not? And the question is, are you going through DAS or have you been going and doing this with your own subcontracting?
Representative Comp, Senator Monroe, it's a complicated question. I'm going to focus on what I think is your focus around the student data systems. These are a significant portion of our sort of IT infrastructure is to receive and maintain and keep secure student records that we get from our colleges, our universities, and increasingly our private regulated institutions as well. We are in the process of sort of transitioning the Oregon University student records to a HEC-based system. We are working with DAS and working with their ETS to help to house and hold secure our student records. We have an ongoing relationship with a company, Easy Street, that is one of that DAS also works with, that DTS also works with, that is the sort of hosting sort of repository for the student data, and we're be happy to share more with you. We did a presentation in front of the IT subcommittee on this very point.
Thank you. I just follow up. Will the day be within the next 5 years or less that a university won't have to ask for a high school transcript in order to, you know, look at their who's admitted and who's not into college?
Representative Kump, Senator Monroe, I don't know. I'd have to follow up with you about that. Insofar as it's a data system question, I think that I want to check with OEIB, Peter Trauma, understand how the longitudinal data system that includes K-12 might provide that sort of support and ability to the universities.
Just a comment, Mr. Co-Chair. I think it's interesting. I mean, it might put some people into a different category of employee into a different position, but the work that happens in high schools, community colleges, the universities, I mean, when you're talking about your post-bac programs, I mean, the first thing they want is that official copy of your transcripts. And I would imagine almost everybody in this room knows what it's like to go through three or four different schools that you've been to and get an official copy. And it would be really a wonderful asset that we could give to this state if we could sometime, not knowing when that future might be, but so that we systematically, as IT has just so incredibly moved forward so fast, that there's systems out there that can really support our goals and our visions.
That's a great point. Thank you, Representative Kump. Mr. Co-Chair, before I move from this slide, I just want to highlight the last line on it, which is the responsibility that the HEC and our associated agencies have for workforce development. CCWD has been, continues to be, one of the state's lead agencies in supporting the workforce system, the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, our local workforce investment boards, and that responsibility continues in the budget and in the organization that we're describing to you. As a result of changes in the law, including a bill that is in process now that sort of continues and consolidates this work, the HEC is responsible for and merging agencies that historically have been separate and distinct: OSAC, CCWD, the Office of Degree Authorization, which used to be in OSAC, private career schools, which used to be in the Department of Education and our state authorizing agency for veterans services, which also used to be in the Department of Education. We also inherit, of course, responsibilities from the Chancellor's Office. So in a sense, five agencies or portions of five agencies that are being combined in a single structure, and that's you'll see that. Some continuation of those distinctions, but also some merging and integration of those old agencies. Let me just actually move on to highlight where there is merging and where there continue to be distinctions. This is our proposed organization for the 2015-17 biennium. The first two pillars from the left here, policy and operations and Office of Research and Data, those will be truly integrated, non-siloed offices within the HEC, providing back office support. That's the policy and operations. That's where we get our IT network support. That's where we get our HR, accounting, budget, et cetera. And then our Office of Research and Data, where for the first time we'll be keeping within a single structure our community college, university, and some amount of workforce and private post-secondary data. And the other offices here reflect a continuation of a certain amount of silos, although I think putting them within the same structure and to some extent co-locating them creates a lot more opportunity for collaboration. But this is where you see OSAC and its continued role called out in yellow, CCWD with its continued responsibilities for community colleges and workforce in blue, university coordination, the portion of the Chancellor's Office's responsibilities that we inherit in green, our private post-secondary unit in orange, and then the proposed Center for Community Innovation in gray. I'm going to start in on our policy option packages. These are not in numerical order. Rather, they follow, for the most part, the order of the offices. So they're sort of thematically organized to reflect, and they're color-coded to reflect the office structure that we've proposed within our budget. I'll begin with package that is a little bit confusing or misleading. It's package 100, POP 100. This is a package that essentially effectuates the transfer of the organizations that I've described as moving to the HEC and their CSL budgets to the HEC. So from this package, assuming approval, the HEC agency would be responsible for and receive the dollars associated with funding public university state appropriations, including the statewide public services, state programs, sports action lottery, OHSU debt service, and OSAC. So this is not a package that costs dollars over and above CSL. It is really a transfer package, and for that reason, I won't spend much time on it.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, maybe Doug can help me follow the money better or something. It's a little odd that CSL has put in a POP. A POP is normally something that we hear as a proposal for potentially even a one-time biennial thing. So if the CSL is handled this way for the 15-17 biennium, that's fine, but then how will it be handled in the future? Would it roll into the automatic budget then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, this is sort of a one-time transfer. So in the future, HEC stands by itself. So as the budget is calculated each biennium, it's as part of HEC. We're in that transitional period right now. And for one reason, you don't see CWD on this list. We already assumed it transferred because of actions you took, I believe, in 2014. I can't remember the bill number. But you had already sort of told CCWD that they were going to transfer. That hadn't necessarily taken place legally for public universities and OSAC yet. Okay. And so that's coming on down the line. So in the future, after this coming biennium, it's HEC. And it will be, unless you change it again, which at least in the short term, I hope you don't do, because it is it is a pain trying to follow all this.
Senator Roblin.
So in the current HEC budget, you're telling me that CCWD is already there in their CCWD. They don't need to have a POP for that because it happened before.
We, Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, we assume that happens July 1. But you had already taken the action.
Okay.
So, and that said July 1, do it.
So this is July 1's budget.
Yep.
Therefore, it is assumed to be in that budget.
Yep.
Okay. And I just wanted to follow the money like.
And if folks are wondering, the 10.9 for workforce development, the base is included in this budget along with CCWD's roughly $3 or $4 million of general fund for operations.
Okay. I did want to know that.
Okay.
Thank you. The next slide is POP 301. So again, not going in numeric order, but starting with this because it reflects some of the really the core of the work that's required to do the streamlining and the integration of a consolidated agency. So the funds associated with this POP, the costs associated with this POP, roughly a $300,000 request for general fund. There's a diminishment of federal fund, and there are three FTE. That's a reflection of the needs that a standalone integrated state agency will have on the operations side around human resources, IT, budget, and payroll. This POP helps to make the integration of an agency possible. And failure to adopt it would mean our continuing to operate in a more siloed way, relying to a greater extent on DAS client services than services that we would have in-house around HR and IT, having patchwork systems rather than a sort of single integrated operational backbone for the agency. I'll come back to these. As Doug alluded, there are some additional needs associated with this project that we've identified that I'll come back to at the end. It'll be the sort of final. It doesn't have a POP number, so I'll come back to it at the end. POP 302 is an under other funds package. So this is a fee-funded package of about $200,000 and one FTE to support our work in the support for and the regulation of the non-exempt private sector. Our independent colleges and universities are exempt from state oversight. We have a good and important relationship with them, but our non-exempt institutions are subject to fairly significant state oversight and receive a certain amount of state support. This package would is in conjunction with the ratification of previously adopted fees. That's in House Bill 5025 and a proposed fee bill, Senate Bill 218, that will support our ability to do increased site visits to those institutions, will support our ability to implement the state authorization reciprocity agreement, which supports Oregon students in online education, and enhances our sort of regulatory support and oversight of these institutions. POP 304 is another slightly confusing POP. You'll see here the dollar amount is $0 general fund. There's an the slide, though, in the final bullet point alludes to $381,000 of dues associated with continuing Oregon's membership, primarily in WICHE, the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education. These are dues that have historically been borne by the chancellor's office. They were paid by the Oregon University System. Likewise, for the other organizations, national organizations referred to here, the Education Commission on the States and the State Higher Education Executive Officers Association, those dues comprise the other 20% of that $381,000 fund. Doug or Bill may be able to explain if there are questions why it shows as $0. Essentially, this package was funded through a transfer from the Public University Support Fund, recognizing that these were dues paid by the university system in the past, and to try to make that possible on an ongoing basis. I'll note the WICHE dues are critical for our universities, our colleges, and for the state of Oregon for a variety of reasons. I mentioned SARA, the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement, which we are able to participate in and our institutions are able to participate in because of our involvement in WICHE. There are other supports that we get from these organizations.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ben, when you have this $381,000, that's just strictly for the dues. It doesn't how does it work when some of their team comes out here and helps us organize and do those things? Is that cost above all these dues?
Representative Kump, Senator Monroe, to my knowledge, we don't pay these organizations, and they don't bill us when they come for additional support. That's provided in really exchange for Oregon's membership through dues with these organizations. And we do receive, as you know, Madam Co-Chair, we do receive considerable benefit from these organizations, including they're bringing folks here to help support you, support us in our policy work.
Right. Dennis is almost a legislator.
We know him well. I'm going to move on now to the sort of second of our offices, and this is really research and data, the other kind of integrated office within our organization. And here again, sort of the follow the money question is a slightly confusing one. I would describe this essentially as another CSL POP, because what you did in 2014 was approve a transfer of dollars from the chancellor's office to the HEC in order to support our ability to help fund the research and data that the chancellor's office historically did as we transitioned to a new structure. So you approved $700,000 in the current biennium. The cost of this POP, the $1.4 million of that's in package 80, is the biennialization, taking that $700,000 to a two-year in order for us to continue to employ research and data and IT folks to collect data from and analyze, evaluate, and report on data coming from our universities. So this we would view essentially as a CSL package. The effect of not adopting this package would be to eliminate five positions from the HEC, formerly the Chancellor's Office, and effectively end our ability to collect data from the public universities, analyze that data, report it to you, use it for funding purposes, et cetera. I'm going to start now on several POPs related to the Office of Student Access and Completion. This slide contains three together. They're all related to providing support for high school students in the transition, middle and high school students in the transition to post-secondary in POPs 211, 212, and 213. These all show as federally funded POPs. Essentially, we are proposing in our budget to expand Aspire and support Aspire, the counseling mentoring program for middle and high, and now actually some college students as well, through a federal grant that we expect to receive in the second year of the biennium, the College Access Challenge Grant. So this will permit Aspire to expand from 145 to 200 sites. There's an incorrect number on the slide here. Instead of the second bullet point, should refer to 55 additional sites, not 80. It will help to fund the very modest level of staff support that we provide to those sites and those volunteers who work with the students. It will, POP 213 builds on our successful work with high schools in getting more students to complete FAFSAs. We've seen 10 to 20% increases in the targeted high schools that we've worked with. We have a data sharing agreement with the federal government, so we can let high schools know exactly which students, which seniors have completed FAFSAs and which haven't. And that allows them to target their outreach efforts to students to ensure that they get their applications for federal financial aid completed on time. As I said, this is funded through a federal grant in the second year of the biennium. One of OSAC's other responsibilities is the administration of 500 private scholarship programs, roughly 500 private. They provide the administrative backbone, some very small families that want to start a private scholarship program, and the state of Oregon through OSAC provides the administrative support for awarding those dollars. Through this unit, we award over 3,000 scholarships to Oregon students annually. About $18 million a year of private dollars flow through this. And this has been a self-supporting program through fee revenues that are paid by the private scholarship donors. Administrative costs associated with support for these programs have outpaced the increases in the funds themselves. So if you imagine a sort of legacy family scholarship that may be at, you know, $1,000 per student for five students, you know, year in, year out, that hasn't increased in many cases. Our administrative costs have, in the way that state public agencies and private organization administrative costs, staffing costs essentially increase. This package would commit a modest amount of general fund to help ensure that we continue to provide support for these private scholarships. So it recognizes that through a $300,000 general fund. There is still, because of the reduced administrative fees, there is still a reduction in positions within the agency. So we'd go from, we'd lose 1.67 positions, but continue to support the private scholarships that we support today. I'm going to skip opportunity grant since we've talked about it before. That's POP 131. So there is a bullet here that I'll note. So I won't focus on the $26 million that we requested in the GRB for increase in the opportunity grant, but I will note that funding does include $250,000 for one-time contracted computer programming support should the legislature adopt the proposed changes that we've made in House Bill, or that we've proposed in our House Bill 2407. Thank you, Dana, for a new allocation methodology for the opportunity grant. The majority of these funds, however, vast majority of these funds are in increased scholarship dollars. Final package related to OSAC is an IT one, and an important one. Talked about the student records that the HEC keeps from universities, community colleges, and some private institutions. We also receive a tremendous amount of student record and student data at OSAC. Essentially, as a student completes a FAFSA and submits it to the federal government, we also receive that information from the feds, and we use that to process the opportunity grant, among other things. So we have a robust financial aid management information system, a secure system, but one that requires modernization in order to continue to protect student data and improve functionality. You approved in 2013 $200,000 for a business case for the updating and modernization of our financial aid management information system. If this POP is approved, these funds would be sequestered until the business case has been reviewed and approved per protocol. And at that point, assuming that the business case is approved, whatever costs associated with that business case up into the amount in this POP would be spent to upgrade this important system. Switching gears and looking now at CCWD, and in particular WD workforce, and getting back to Representative Huffman's point of emphasis at the outset around the state's and the HEC's responsibility for workforce development. There are three packages here, the last of which, again, is a functionally a CSL package, but it requires your approval because of some program changes. The first two are requests for new investment. One, package 201 in youth employment. And so this is a request for $16 million of general fund. The governor's budget indicates that this is funded through a transfer from the Special Employment Department Administration Fund, or CDAF, but it's transferred to general fund and then pays for this package. The vast majority of these dollars are spent to communities and in communities to support employment, paid employment for youth ages 14 to 24. The exact contours of that would be largely defined by local workforce investment boards. A portion of this funding would also support youth employment through the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, a program that we operate and support. It would be a significant state recognition of the importance of work experiences for young Oregonians.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ben, is the Special Employment Department Administrative, I understand why you say CDAP, is that, again, general fund, other funds, federal funds? Where does that come from? $16 million is a... Nice little pocket of change.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill McGee, the Department of Administrative Services. CDAF is an other funds revenue source that's received by the Employment Department. It's a legislatively approved and federally approved 0.9% diversion from the employer the unemployment tax. It's approved for state agency efforts on the work the Employment Department, or you have in several banks, including the last one, you've transferred some of that money to the general fund in order to pay for programs, including $7.5 million in CCWD's budget. So it's another fund source. We're proposing to continue. Actually, the transfer for this buying the governor's budget would be a total of $37.9 million for several of the packages you'll see here, basically to support workforce efforts, to help folks get back to work, which will impact our employment rate, which will ultimately reduce our unemployment tax rate.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson, is this something that we've seen in this committee before? I'm just really appreciative of the detail and the information.
Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, like I think Mr. McGee said, CDAF had sort of been linked to some workforce stuff in the past, but keep in mind what's happening here is, for lack of a better term, a term everyone understands, CDAP funds are being swept and put into the general fund, even in the governor's budget, but they're tied verbally or whatever in the governor's budget to these this proposal and a few others that are in HEC and also, I believe, the employment department or education department. I need to check that. So you've seen it before, but it has been a practice that's happened over the past few biennia. The co-chair's framework, I think, assumed that, I'm not sure at what amount, that those some of those funds would be swept, but didn't dedicate it to a specific purpose, as Mr. McGee said that the governor's office or the governor's budget did.
Co-chair, you did see a CDAF transfer last biennium in the CCWD budget. There was a $7.5 million expansion of the workforce programs that was transferred through this same mechanism. And all of the transfer in the governor's budget is involved in the HEC, in the package you'll now see in the HEC budget.
Thank you.
The Youth Conservation Corps, I believe, wasn't that patterned after the old CCC from the Great Depression era? And if that's the case, I wondered how that works, whether the young people are in dormitories together or camp out or just show up at work. And, you know, give me a little, I'm an old history professor, so give me a little background on the on how it works.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, my name is Karen Hummelbaugh. I am the workforce deputy for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And it is modeled after the Conservation Corps concept that occurred, you know, in this country. What happens is that these youth are based in their communities, in their counties. So there isn't necessarily a dormitory style situation for them, but they are working on projects that are in their communities. Usually we are transporting them via van into whatever project that they're working on. They're not just out there kind of pulling weeds or picking up trash. We are making sure that we're connecting this in an educational way as well, so they're learning not only the job skills while they're out there doing these things, but they're also learning about the environment, protection of resources, etc. So it's even though they are doing some of that, you know, getting the really hard work of blackberries and stuff like that, they're also replanting and learning about how to sustain our natural resources.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you. Just want to clarify, Doug, you used the term sweep and Bill used the term transfer. Yeah. In my mind, when we transfer CDEF funds, they're transferred into the general fund and the dollars are tied to programs, as was mentioned. Sweeping, to me, would denote that we're taking funds from CDEF, putting them in the general fund for non-specified purposes. Are any of the CDAF funds being swept, or are they all being transferred?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, I would argue that technically there probably isn't a difference, and it might be a matter of semantics. Mr. McGee may disagree with me, but he is supporting the governor's concept of linking them together. So, procedurally, I don't think there's that much difference.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Huffman, I, of course, wouldn't disagree with Doug publicly. But to give you some history here, last biennium, the governor proposed a $10 million CDAP transfer to pay for workforce programs. The co-chairs used $7.5 million of that for workforce programs in the CCWD budget. The remaining $2.5 million were used for general state budget needs. So then I'll leave it up to others to parse that.
So it's both. Senator Roblin.
So I guess I'll ask the same question a different way. So we are sweeping some money from CDEF and putting it into the general fund. And then we're taking some of that swept money and transferring it to CCWD and these other actors. Which part of the sweep is not transferred is what I guess I would like to know.
Actually, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Roblin, again, a matter of semantics, whether it's transferred or appropriated.
Appropriated, yes.
So,
into the script.
I think we ought to ask our auditor.
What was the answer, though?
I'm avoiding answering because it doesn't matter semantics.
That's the question.
No.
No. It's okay.
Senator Roblin has
moving right along.
Moving right along. So, Karen, you can stay for the next couple since we're still on workforce and we'll be for the next two slides. So the second request for new general fund, also CDAF related in the governor's budget, so it's been described again as same mechanism, whatever language one chooses to use for it, but the same mechanism to fund a $6 million investment in incumbent workers. And this is proposed to support workers in targeted industry sectors to increase their earnings and create a return on investment for the employees and employers and the state of Oregon. So a way that we can supplement the federal workforce investment, or WIOA now, dollars, which are important for Oregon's workforce training, but not sufficient to meet the needs that our local workforce investment boards, our communities express, and our employers express around workforce development. So a second package here, again, focused on supporting local workforce investment boards and their efforts to help skill and train our employees. The final workforce-related package, this is the one that perhaps, again, is sort of in this sort of confusing bucket insofar as it's described as a $0 general fund and, in fact, does not require a new commitment of dollars but still shows up as a POP. You heard from Bill about the prior use of CDAF dollars as general fund to support workforce investments. This is a continuation of that, of those initiatives. Again, focused on supporting our local workforce investment boards in their leadership of regional and community strategies to improve workforce development. There are a number of changes embedded within these package, and it's described in the bullet points in how the $10.9 million associated with that ongoing funding would be spent to support the LWIBs. And you see, and if there are questions, I know Karen can speak to the pretty dynamic environment that the LWIBs are in right now and the support that this would provide to them in terms of technical assistance, best practices, development of strategies to meet their local community needs around workforce training and investment. A final CCWD package is a general one that is not workforce specific. It's actually really more focused on the portion of the portion of CCWD of this office that supports community colleges specifically. It's POP 311, and I think a little bit of history might be useful here. During and through the recession, CCWD did what many state agencies did, which was to maximize its federal work because it does have federal funded work in order to, and its federal funding in order to support continued staffing and continued efforts by the agency. It significantly trimmed the number of general funded positions within the agency to the point where we currently now have just 8.65 FTE, general funded FTE, at CCWD to do all of the work associated with community colleges, their funding, their budget development, their program approval, their support on the data and research side. It's down to a pretty small crew of general funded folks. What this package proposes to do is shift positions to general funded work in order to provide the capacity necessary to meet legislative requests and requirements, commission requests and requirements, and college requests and requirements for support. So as a result of adopting this package, we would move from 8.65 FTE general funded to 13.45 FTE. That's out of a total agency or office of almost 60 FTE. Really critical for us to be able to do the reporting, do the research, do the support, do the budget and funding work that we're required to do, and urge your strong consideration of this package.
Sure. Senator Roblin.
Could you go back one slide? Because I just want to make sure that, because next year I'm thinking I will see this again. So this, in this particular POP, that's the money that was actually transferred already over, the 10.9. And so it comes up with zero GF because it's already been done. Will we see that in the previous ones next year? So because we're making this POP for next year, the following year, will we see a similar page next year with zero again, because they would all of them, they would now be in the general fund budget ahead?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, again, I would say, except for the changes within the individual items, you would not necessarily need this package even now.
Oh.
Now, Mr. McGee may disagree with me because he's trying to link it to CDEF again,
right.
But there are some changes, as you notice here, of internally, and
right.
I think you will still need a package to approve or disapprove those. Come next biennium, we probably shouldn't see this package at all again.
Or the one before it.
Or the...
Which,
I'm not sure which.
If you go back one more, it's also all transfer money. And therefore, this one needed to happen because we hadn't done it already.
Right. And this is a new program, new money. And if approved or at whatever level approved, it should roll up.
And you wouldn't need it
again.
Okay. That's. Thank you.
Bill? Just Senator, following Doug's, you're seeing package 203 because in the prior two biennium, you approved specific expenditures for those dollars. We're asking you to change how those dollars are expended in 15-7. So that's why you're seeing this truly policy package.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was what I heard Doug say, too.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
maybe I blipped out here. This is transferring staff?
No.
No, it's purely transferring for you. If you take a look at that slide on 203, it says on the second bullet, increases funding for Work Ready Communities Program. The next bullet says reduction in funding. So within that 10.9, they're proposing changing it some of the mix of the spending.
That makes sense.
Okay.
I was trying to... On I think it's the next slide, the FTE going from 8 to 13.
Oh, I see.
So, Representative Huffman, Mr. Co-Chair, no, this doesn't involve transferring any staff. It involves really transferring the funding source for staff. So when we're using federal funds to pay staff, they're required to do federal work. Much of that involves support for the workforce investments that are federally funded through CCWD. What we're suggesting in this package is that given the increasing demands on CCWD and what has been over time a diminishment of general funded positions at CCWD, and when I talk about increasing demands, I'm talking about community college and legislative and HEC demands for non-federal work that can't be funded federally. We're proposing that some of our staffing needs to shift back to being more general fund in order to meet the commission's and college needs. So this is a shift in funding sources, not a transfer of positions.
And
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. And it appears that we did that back in February of 14, and this is just continuing that thing that we already did in 2014.
That's good.
Yeah.
And Madam
Slightly different way.
Madam Co-Chair.
My brain's working back to the early 90s. And so when we talk about, I understand where Ben's talking about, general fund use, and we used to use the word all the time, supplanting. Do we still have any Perkins funds or any those types of funds coming into CCWD?
Madam Chair, yes, we do, and would be happy to follow up with a more complete description of the federal funding sources of this agency. As the FTE denotes, the majority of CCWD staff is federally funded
right.
because of Perkins programs like Perkins, like the Workforce Investment Act and other federal supports.
Yeah, it always amazes me some committee that some superintendent put you on 30 years ago. It's like, oh, I remember that. It's weird.
You know what they say about people that remember things that happened a long time ago but can't remember things that happened yesterday.
I know. I better drink some more water.
Mr. Co-Chair, if you really want to have fun following the money, welcome to the Engineering and Technology Innovation Council, or ETIC. And this package, again, here it shows up as a $4.7 million general fund package, and that's how it's reflected within the HEC budget. ETIC's history is one of shifting between the funding of this program, shifting between agencies, and now being divided, essentially, between agencies. What is proposed in here is a continuation of state investment in ETIC. This is the this package works in conjunction with a low number package 21 to complete the shift of historical funding of $24.5 million into sustaining funding for ETIC. So this again, when you look broadly at the state budget, this does not require a commitment of new funds over and above what has the CSL for historically committed ETIC dollars.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you. Ben has been 24 and a half. I was thinking it was more like 27.
So, Representative Huffman, Mr. Co-Chair, the 24 and a half reflects 80% of the CSL. So the CSL is actually closer to $30 million on the total for ETIC. The reason 80% is that 20% has been proposed to be spent by a, or invested by a talent council focused on innovative new projects, with the other 80% that's reflected in the $24.5 million spent in largely consistent with ways that it has been previously, focused on our core basic engineering capacity at our public universities. So that's where this package and the 80% resides.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, just a little bit of additional history. Ben's correctly right. We have $24 million here, which is 80%. That's in the HEC budget. The remaining $6 million, roughly, in the governor's budget was in the OAIB budget and continues to remain there at the moment. It was originally discussed as expenditures for STEM and CTU, or primary STEM work. As Ben indicated, there is legislation that appears to have some legs that would create a talent council and use that $6 million that governor's budget has in OAIB for the talent council. So.
Follow up, Mr.
Go
Chair.
Ahead.
Let me give you an example to make sure that we're on track, and it's probably, hopefully, within the roughly $6 million for the Talent Council. One of the things I've been advocating for, and I've always supported ETIC, but more in recent years, I've seen a gap with some of our community college partners developing feeder programs for OSU, OIT, and others in engineering. And so I've supported using either some of the ETIC money or additional money or something to feed in to diversify more than what we historically have to get, you know, whether it's Columbia Gorge Community College or any of the others having engineering AA feeder programs into OIT, which have largely been lacking, and community colleges have largely been left out of that formula.
Representative Huffman, Mr. Co-Chair, the 20% that's not in this budget but is associated now with the Talent Council, my understanding is that community colleges and even K-12 would be eligible to apply for and receive those dollars to support those that type of work and development in STEM and CTE fields.
Okay.
Just the last couple of slides related to POPs. So here we've combined POPs 151 and 152 and called this the community agenda. This is the proposal that you've heard about that to create a center for community innovation. That's in 151. That would be essentially the state staffing at the HEC to support communities through a community leverage fund of proposed $25 million or $2 million per region. The governor's office, Whitney Grubbs, has described this to you in our original budget presentation, but the focus here is on achieving the 40-40-20 goal through regional collaborative efforts, helping support and connect the work of our CCOs, our early learning hubs, our regional achievement collaboratives, LWIBs, Workforce Investment Boards, STEM hubs, and Regional Solutions Advisory Committee. A lot of interest and excitement around getting this work done on a regional basis with support from the state to remove those barriers, provide technical assistance, and disseminate best practices. Final slide, and this does not have a package number associated with it, and so we've called it a supplemental package. This really works in conjunction with the first package that I described. It's, I think, 301, to clarify and ensure that the HEC has the operational infrastructure necessary to, as Doug noted, among other things, oversee more than $1 billion of public funds per biennium. So this supplemental package resulted from discussions with Bill and Doug at DAS and LFO respectively, as well as others, to identify where our core needs would be around human resources, IT, and accounting. So we've itemized that list in the bullet points here. It totals almost $1 million, 900,000 roughly of general fund, a little bit of other fund. This really is completion of the work that we are proposing to do to create an integrated higher education coordinating commission agency.
Senator Roblin.
So, yeah, I'll go back one. After hearing what you just said, and I'll ask this to Doug. Does HEC have the legislative authority to give money to hubs and other kinds of things, since they're usually higher ed? Because all of that community agenda leverage thing is going to groups like STEM hubs, regional solutions advisory committees. I mean, if I read the list, they are not necessarily the ones that I see under the preview of HEC. So I'm worried that they have the ability to actually expend funds in those ways. I don't know. To be honest,
Mr. Chair, Senator Roland, I'm not sure either, and I do not believe the governor submitted a bill other than what's in the budget for this activity. We'll have to check whether or not they have the authority.
Because it may have
They do have some rather broad agency authorities,
yeah, I know,
in picking their stuff up, but this specifically, I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you.
Final slide that I intended to cover today, although there we've included some others that describe our kind of organizational charts and design, but this is really a summary of what you've seen previously. So these are the packages. Again, not including, and I didn't include on here, package 131, although there is $250,000 within it for the agency, but not including Public University Support Fund, Community College Support Fund, the Oregon Opportunity Grant. These are critical packages for the agency's infrastructure as well as workforce activities and Aspire and FAFSA outreach that will help the HEC achieve its vision and yours, I hope, for post-secondary training and education. I'll note, when you focus right down to the sort of staffing level, the level of the agency that works with me, a minuscule percent of it's actually about $1.8 billion that in the GRB that would flow through the HEC, a minuscule percentage of that is general fund staff for our agency. We think we're right-sized. We think that we are less than the sum of our old parts. So if you were to take an old chancellor's office and take old OSAC and CCWD and ODE, the portions of those agencies that we've inherited, you'd actually find that we've simplified, we've streamlined, we're getting some organizational and operational efficiencies, and we'll do more than the sum of our parts when it comes to results. So from a staffing and an administrative level, a slimming, but in a results level, a growing. And that's, I think, a pretty exciting thing for us and for the state. I do, Mr. Co-Chair, if you're willing, I did receive some questions from Representative Huffman about some areas of our budget that we haven't spent a lot of time on, and I think now would be a good time for us to touch on them. And they really are focused on our state support for economic development and research. And we've talked a little about the workforce piece of that through CCWD, talked a little bit about ETIC. And in our budget presentation, you heard about our requests for CSL funding for the statewides operated by Oregon State University, including Extension, Forest Research, Ag Experiment Station, some of the state programs that are focused on economic development and research specifically. And, you know, I think the questions, and Representative Huffman, I'll stop here in a moment in case you want to articulate on the questions further before I dive into any answers, but I think the questions really are about how the HECS recommendations for CSL budgets associated with those were developed, what kind of consideration we paid to state kind of economic goals and needs at the institutional level, at the campus level, and I'm happy to address those, but want to make sure I'm sort of getting it right. In terms
sounds
of
like you're headed the right direction.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. So, to be very clear, the commission in its first year of existence and in developing this budget request for the governor and for you, paid much more attention to the state's educational activities around 40-40-20 than it did to our universities and particularly OSU's work in economic development, in community support via extension, ag research, et cetera. And the commission spent relatively little time on those very important portions of our budget. It adopted at the outset a strategic plan that was very much 40-40-20 focused and that still operates under that umbrella, and partly as a result, it simply didn't spend a lot of time on other aspects, important aspects of the agency's budget. As a result, I think it's fair to say that we essentially brought forward requests for the statewides in particular and state programs that are CSL requests. It basically was the position of the commission could, I think, essentially be characterized as, we think these are worthy programs. We haven't spent a lot of time considering whether to propose significant increases or diminishments to them. We really haven't spent a lot of time with them at all. So we're going to just give you a CSL recommendation for those. That recommendation should not be considered either a sort of ringing endorsement or any sort of suggestion that it would be inappropriate or unwise to spend more than that. I think the commission believes quite strongly that those are very important and valuable programs for the state of Oregon, simply ones that in this first round of budget development we did not spend a lot of time considering. I will note that we, like you, were operating under a restricted funds environment, and any dollar that we proposed increasing for one area of the budget, we had to pull out of some other. We didn't have an actual real revenue cap the way that you do, but we had the governor presented us with a 20% increase cap. So we put most of that increase, new money, into debt service, which we're required to pay and increase costs there, and into new funding for our university support fund, our community college support fund, and our opportunity grant. We did not put new money over and above CSL into the statewides or our state programs. I think it's entirely appropriate for your subcommittee and the Ways and Means Committee generally to take a very close look at those programs and activities to consider potential increases over and above CSL, and you certainly will not get any pushback from your Higher Education Coordinating Commission if that should be the route that you choose to go.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ben, it's helpful to a point, that explanation. I guess what I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Chair, is in the Capital Construction Subcommittee a few weeks back, we had testimony, probably been more than a few weeks, actually. My, how time flies. Brian Fox presented the university budget, and then President Ray was there to augment. It was, I guess I'm trying to figure out, maybe we all are, just as is HEC, trying to figure out what role HEC plays, what individual roles the universities play. Is is OSU going to come before the subcommittee, for example, a program that I would love to hear and see more about, the statewide's, the $16 million proposal.
Right.
Where is that? Where do we hear about it? It was mentioned in the Capital Construction Subcommittee, but that was kind of about it, along with many other needs for higher ed.
Yeah.
How's that going to be handled, those asks, and how does this subcommittee find out more about things like that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd like to know more, too. Doug, can you answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, we haven't had the agencies describe those because they have not been part of the governor's budget, which is sort of what they're working off of. If you would like to have more information, we could probably schedule part of a day in here on that. I can tell you that.
And are there policy bills attached to it that maybe we're going to get?
I'm not the higher ed analyst. Paul is, but Bill is, and he's shaking his head that way. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, there is a bill attached to the $16 million.
I don't know that you know the number.
I'm not sure if you have it in Ways and Means.
It is in Ways and Means.
It is in Ways and Means?
Yep. It came out of the Senate Education.
So I guess at that point, I would imagine it would be up to the co-chairs if they choose to have you schedule it. So I did to work the bill.
Okay. So, Betty, maybe when we're meeting with the co-chairs, we might want to bring up this issue. And do you know what the number of the bill is?
We'll find out soon.
It's right here.
657.
Senate Bill 657. 657. Okay.
All depends whether we want to give up our Monday.
Well,
big decision. No, I'm teasing. But we do have,
Senator Thompson really likes to come on Monday, and he misses the Monday meetings. But
are we not meeting again on Monday?
Right. Senator Roblin.
I guess on the same line, when you go back and look at the mission of HEC, and it really does focus on 40-40-20, if there are programs within HEC like the statewide and some of these other workforce things that we need to really, because I think a lot of us think they're very important overall economically, and I'm sure HEC does as well. If we need to look at the founding documents of HEC and our statement to you to emphasize that more with an amendment or whatever so that it becomes a part of what you look at in a different way, I really like to have a thought about that because I want 40-40-20 to be the focus kind of in education, but there are a lot of these things that, if done, provide the places for those people who are 40-40-20 to go work at, and there is a connection there, and I want to make sure that that conversation has a place that we've said this is where it's going to happen at, and so I go along with Senator Huffman in trying to think about if we need to add to your mission, which we tend to do sometimes, is add to other people's missions. It would be worth, I don't know if we need to have a conversation about it or whatever, mm-hmm. as we move forward, or at least have to think about how do we help you focus some attention on some of these other parts of what we do see as your mission, because I think you do as well. I guess I'd love to hear any suggestions in the future. There's nothing today, but.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Roblin, I know that I appreciate the thought, and I think there is some potential there. And I know that the commission, as it revisits its strategic plan that it adopted now over a year ago, and likely develops between now and the fall a new sort of 2015 to 2020 strategic plan, I think the commission is very likely to pay more attention than it did in its first to some of these other areas, including workforce development, economic development, and research, than it did in the first version, which was very 40-40-20 focused. That said, we're asking our institutions to do a lot of different things. You're being asked to support the institutions to do a lot of different things. And part of what I hope our commission can do is provide clarity around what the highest priorities ought to be. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, those are very challenging conversations inevitably. And whether we have them or you have them or both of us will ultimately have to have them, and they will be difficult because we can't do it all with the level of funding that we'd like to.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to wrap up, and since this is my first session on this subcommittee, I'm just trying to figure out. My perception was historically under the chancellor, the universities maybe presented maybe more of their own agenda than maybe what we've experienced this session. I could be wrong. That's just my perception. So I was wondering how, maybe for Jock's benefit on the back row, and I haven't talked with him about this, I don't know. Maybe he's not concerned at all. But I want to make sure that universities that do have their own POPs, if you will, how we're going to handle that this term and in the future.
Well, my experience is that in the past, when all the universities were separate and when the community colleges were separate, there was a lot more competition for dollars, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, with kind of a unified ask, a unified agency that deals with all of higher education, I don't see that happening as much, and I think that's a good thing.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
To follow up on that, I agree. I mean, it's been very streamlined, and which is something Ben had been promising with HEC, streamlining, and I have witnessed that. I think most of us up here are pretty passionate about something like the statewides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. just want to make sure that there's a framework or a venue to make sure that something so important doesn't fall through the cracks.
Oh, it won't fall through the cracks.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chair, I really agree with what Representative Huffman is saying, and I it goes a little farther. We have given different universities different legislative goals. Last time we set up a fermentation science deal at University of at Oregon State. We've done other kinds of things at other places, and they don't fit into this streamlined deal because they're individually regular things, and so I don't know where they end up with respect to the budget process if we're going
another
to go
good
forward.
Example.
And if we decide to expand on one of them, would this go to a different subcommittee because it's about XYZ, ag and natural resources, because it's about ag. How do they end up in the same places? There's some asks out there now that I think are being the conversation is happening in another agenda, and I would love to see it eventually move into our agenda because I think ongoing it's an education issue of similar kind of thing where we have asks. And how we organize that over the future is something I think we need to have a conversation.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair. Thank you. The OSU Daimler is another one
exactly.
that I'm not sure where it is, but I've read up on it. It's exciting. I'm supportive. Mm-hmm. But where is it? How's it going to get to us? How do we advocate for stuff like that?
It might be in. I think it's in the transportation.
I agree, but it. But once it's there in an education setting, should it be in the education budget as an ongoing? I mean, maybe getting it set up is in one place, but once it's part of a university, does it come to HEC?
Good question, Madam Co-Chair.
In thinking, I really like this conversation because we are in a transition that we've gone from the chancellor's office, and now HEC has done a year of incredible foundation work, but now we're at another level of understanding and asking, is the University of Oregon going to come to us about how to upgrade their track facilities in a couple of years so we can have a national competition? And so our current system isn't there yet. it just isn't there yet. So, yeah, this is a well-timed question.
Okay.
I knew Doug had it under control.
Mr. Wilson, I believe the decision is that we will not meet again until next Tuesday?
That is right. In fact, we're past the deadlines, I think, for Monday, I'm guessing. Anyway, so you're lucky.
good work, Rod.
So next Tuesday, we'll be back with ODE and the K through 12 area, mostly concentrating K through 12 area on various strategic investments as they move toward, you know, starting to allocate those dollars among all those different programs.
And Madam Co-Chair and I will be meeting with the big co-chairs now that we have the new budget information, and we'll be trying to decide how to spend all that extra money we have. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair and committee, I want to do a public appreciation of the work that Ben, Mr. McGee, and all the people that are sitting behind him. We gave you a formidable task to pull all these things together, and you get an A++. It's not a wonder you're a Rhodes Scholar. But thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
I just like to say the same sentiments. Thank you. It's nicely said. You guys have done a good job. Thank you.
He was a pretty good legislator, too, you know.
I know.
There are mixed opinions on that.
Okay, I would like to. I will close the public hearing on 5024, and we're adjourned. And we're adjourned. 24.